Hey everybody, Jan Rutherford here with Self-Reliant Leadership. Thanks for joining me today. And for those of you listening to the recording, welcome. I would love to hear who's joining us today. So if you could write in the chat, just let me know where you're, who you are and where you're calling from. And as we get going, let me know what questions you might have. I would love to hear. Keep in mind that there's about a something like a 12-second delay between your question and when I receive it. So I'm glad you're here. And of course, the title of this is Coaching, How to Get Off to a Great Start at the Beginning of the Year. As many of you might know, I'm an executive coach. And I've got quite a few clients and quite a few different companies of all different sizes. Most of the people I coach are at the senior level. And it's that this time of year when everybody's trying to kind of reset. We know that everybody's going through stuff, both personally, professionally. There's a lot going on in our world and in our personal world. And what leaders are all over the world are trying to do is really create a great environment and get the most out of their people. And oftentimes they really don't know where to start in having these conversations. And so I wanted to give you what I think are really best practices and really what I think are kind of fundamentals of what it really takes to be a good coach and get people off to a great start. And as we go, again, a reminder, if you can put in the chat where you're listening from and you know, what part of the world you find yourself in. And again, if you have any questions at all, would love to hear, and we'll kind of get started. So here's the first thing, and I don't have any slides or anything like that. What I'm really trying to do is you know, make this almost like a coaching session. And when I coach people, most of the time, what I see them doing furiously is making notes, and not necessarily about what I said, but how they process it and what they're going to do. You know, sort of the action items, if you will. So here's the first thing, is you sit down with someone. You have to remember two things. They have an agenda and you have an agenda. Your agenda is, I want them to do something in the interest of the organization, and they have an agenda. You know, they have certain things that they want to learn and develop and do. And so it's really important, just like a great salesperson, is to be able to hold two simultaneous agendas and figure out a way that you can reconcile those. And so to me, rather than come to someone at the very beginning of the year and say, hey, here's all the objectives, here's what you need to accomplish, here's the number you need to hit, is to ask this question. Hey, you know, what's the one area that if you made an improvement in would provide the greatest return on time, dollars, and energy for you and the rest of the organization? What's the one area? What we're looking for in that question is, what do they want? What motivates them? What drives them? Do they have self-awareness? That's really what we're looking at. So I can't emphasize enough that you can't get anyone to do anything if you don't understand what they want, what's in it for them. And that's what's so important. One of the key questions I always ask people when I'm coaching them at the very beginning is, what do you want? What is it that drives you? And when you understand that, when you truly understand that, when you care deeply about people and what they want, then we can start to move them. Because what we're trying to do is create a team of committed people, not just people that are compliant and doing what they're told, that they really buy in, that they're putting their heart and soul and their energy into something because they believe in it. And that, again, can be difficult to do. So that is another question to ask yourself when you look at your team. Do I have a team that's committed to what we're doing, or are they compliant? Do they buy in and they're energized, or they're just doing it because they're told to, and it's drudgery? What's interesting is a lot of people are trying to figure out, how do I retain talent these days? And some of the latest research says it's really simple. You've got to put yourself in the shoes of the people that you're managing and leading and ask yourself, is that job fun? And by fun, I don't mean, you know, playful fun. I mean, you know, is it enjoyable? Is it challenging? Is it rewarding? Can you find flow in that job? If your answer is no, then part of your job is to design the job in a way that makes it fun. And what we know that people want these days is they want some flexibility, some autonomy with how they direct their work. They want you to create a great culture and to help provide purpose and meaning. And then, of course, you know, they want to be compensated fairly, and they want you to invest in their development, their mastery. Now, all these things I just described, flexibility, culture, salary, autonomy, purpose, mastery, a lot of those things are really hygiene factors. They're not necessarily going to be things that motivate people, but if they're not at a certain level, they will demotivate. The hygiene is, it has to be, it basically has to be neutral, or you can't go forward. So you have to think about that. And then the other part, when you're trying to figure out what drives and motivates people, is to remember the difference between intrinsic motivators and hygiene factors. The intrinsic motivators are achievement, recognition, the work itself. And what we're trying to do there is help people really realize two things. One, they matter. Their work matters. They matter as a human. And two, they belong. That's it. It's really simple. And that's sort of the unasked question that people are asking of you. You know, do you care? Do I matter? Do I belong here? And if the answer is no, they're either actively or casually looking for other work. And we know right now that the engagement levels are at historic lows. The disengagement levels are at historic highs. And I would venture to say it's not because of salary alone. It really goes back to the hygiene factors and the intrinsic motivators. And that as a leader, that you're purposeful about that. And we often say, you know, great culture is won by design, not won by default. Now, you might be listening to this and saying, well, geez, I'm not at the top of the organization. I don't control culture. Well, I would argue that if you have any authority, you do have a say-so in the culture of that team. That is what it feels like to be a member of that team. And that's important, what it feels like. So, excuse me. So again, to recap, when you're coaching, the first thing you've got to do is really think about what is going to motivate this person. And do I really understand if I captured that? And if I really know what they want, and I help them get what they want, they're going to help me get what I want, which is performance, which is both results and behaviors aligned with the core values. That's what performance really is. Results and relationships, getting stuff done and being pleasant. It's really as simple as that. So once you kind of know where somebody's motivated, then the other thing to think about are the three obligations you have and the three obligations the other person has. So first, the three obligations you have. One, does that person know what the expectations are? Do they know what number they've got to hit, what quality standard they've got to hit, whatever it is on the results side? Do they know that? Do they also know how they need to behave? And one of the things I hear oftentimes is, someone will say, well, I coached this person, they were really defensive, they copped an attitude, you know, they're hard on people that they work with, like, but they're really good. Like, well, that means they're good on the results, but performance is two things, it's results and the relationship. So part of the expectation is helping people understand the behaviors that are expected. You know, hey, you need to be reliable. You need to be responsive. You need to be coachable. You need to be pleasant, you know, and treat people with dignity and respect across the organization. But, you know, outlining those are really important because oftentimes people say, well, this person's not behaving the way I'd like. And I'll say, do they know? Do they know what the expectation is? So that's the first thing. The second thing is, do they know where they stand with you? You owe it to them. And this isn't a thing of courage to tell people where they stand with you. To one of my friends who says, when you care about people, you will be compassionately candid with them because you want what's best for them. You're going to let them know where they're meeting expectations, where they're exceeding expectations, and where they might not be meeting expectations. And that leads to the third thing is, are there consequences for people that exceed expectations, meet expectations, or don't meet them? And by consequences, I mean praise and recognition, catching people doing things right. It also means if somebody isn't upholding the expectations that we have a chat with them. And by consequence, it doesn't mean someone goes on a performance improvement plan or they're going to be terminated. It could mean just simply saying, hey, you know, we agreed to this. You know, you're letting me down. You're letting the team down. You're letting yourself down. I mean, nobody wants to hear that. And most people are going to say, oh, gosh, I didn't realize. And they'll step up. But the important thing as a leader is to remember that praise and recognition needs to be at a ratio of 5 to 1. 5 praise and recognition, catching people doing things right for every time that you give constructive feedback. If it's not a ratio of 5 to 1, people will feel they're not treated fairly. So that's important. And again, the other reason that you want to uphold the standards of the organization is not just for that individual, but for the people around that individual, because they want you, they expect you to uphold the values, to uphold the standard and what it means to be on a high performing team. They don't want to be surrounded by people that are slacking and people get away with stuff, because that'll just hurt your credibility and the commitment that people have to, you know, the purpose and the mission and the meaning of what you're trying to accomplish. Now, the other thing, and this is an expectation, is to make sure that people know what you expect of them. You're going to let them know what the expectations are. You're going to let them know where they stand with you, and you're going to uphold the standards. There's going to be consequences. But here's what they owe to you. And again, you're doing all this stuff, creating a great environment, culture, purpose, meaning, mastery, all this. And again, here's the obligation that they have. 1, they have to be reliable. They have to be on time. They have to show up. They need to be reliable. It's the do what you say you're going to do. That's the basis of trust. The second thing is they have to be competent, which means they're committed to the profession. And competent isn't, hey, I got to a certain level and I'm good. It's constantly honing the edge, constantly getting better. You know, think about physicians. They have to always get continuing education credits. Pilots always have to get check rides. Just because we might not be in those type of areas that are regulated and need certification doesn't mean we have to keep upping our game. And that's an expectation of everyone. Hey, it's your personal responsibility to continue to invest in your own personal growth and development. The third thing that the obligation that they have is that they're curious. And by curious, I mean they ask great questions. They try to bring a creative approach to things. They don't just sit in a meeting and silently. I mean, if they're in a meeting, they better participate. So an expectation is, hey, you're going to be curious about where other people are coming from, why they have their points of view. You're going to ask a lot more questions than you are going to just make statements, because you're going to constantly be seeking to understand. So that's sort of it in a nutshell. And I'm looking at the comments coming in, and you know, we've got some people from Dallas and some people from Hungary, and I would be interested if you all have any questions or comments. And I'll kind of recap real quick. You know, the big picture is, from a coaching perspective, you approach someone, whether they're new, they've been recently onboarded, it's the beginning of the year, you're trying to reset, is really get in their head and ask them, you know, what motivates you? What drives you? What do you want? What's the one area that will provide the greatest return on time, energy, and dollars that will help you and others at the organization? And to really understand behind all that, listen for, do they need flexibility and autonomy? Are they getting what they need from a culture perspective and purpose and meaning? Are their compensation needs met, and do they feel they're being invested in? Because remember, compensation isn't just the base salary and the variable comp. There's a lot of things that go into total compensation. And again, the investment you make in people. And then once you know what motivates someone, then you can start to really describe what your expectations are. And you need to be very clear. You need to be honest. You need to be humble. And you need to uphold the values of the organization. And then it goes back to them and saying, and here's what I expect of you. Not just pointed toward me, but pointed toward the people that report to you, pointed to your peers, to our customers, our vendor partners, everybody, is you need to be reliable, you need to be competent, and you need to be curious. You know, and if you're doing those three things, we are going to be really, really good. And then what your job is constantly coming back and spending time with people. And this is the thing I say to so many executives, is that you really don't realize how many people that work with you just want your time. It's like a privilege. You're talking to 20 people a day, you get lost in the conversations. They have one boss. They will hang on your every word. And if there's respect there, that they really value that time. And so, you know, look at your calendar, and I don't know what the number is, but look at the calendar and calculate what percent of the time are you spending investing in the development of your people. And I will bet whatever that number is, you'll say, that's kind of low. And then what you have to do is say, I can't invent more time of the day, but what are the things that I'm working on that are not essential, that don't move the needle, that I can put on the back burner so I can spend and invest more time in my people so that they know I truly care. So I'm looking at some questions coming in here. Let me pop those up and let's see if we can tackle them here a little bit. I'm a digital marketing manager and I can't focus when I work. I become distracted easily by social media. I think we all do. I think, you know, part of that is really figuring out, well, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? What's really essential? You know, social media, the day-to-day distractions, the fire drills are all things that will consume our time. As Dwight Eisenhower and Benjamin Franklin all said, the only way we're going to get to work on the things that are truly important and not urgent, not distracting, not trivial, is to schedule them, is to put them in the calendar and devote and focus on them. And if you were to look at my calendar, you would see, you know, I've got plenty of things that are busy in meetings and meeting with people, but the things where I'm going to write and create content and focus are scheduled. I mean, and I need blocks of time. It's not 20-minute increments. I need blocks of times to do that. So I hope that helps. Another question's coming in. What questions to ask a coach in a first meeting? You went over the coach side. Oh, I think you're asking, what should the person be asking of their manager? I think that's the question. And my answer would be, again, it goes back to being curious. You know, try to understand what it is the manager really needs to accomplish. What are the expectations they have from their boss? You know, what's the one number that they're being held accountable to? You know, somebody told me once that my job was to keep my boss's boss off my boss's back. And I really think that's great advice. Is I don't think very many bosses, you know, managers, leaders out there really have people that are coming to them saying, well, what keeps you up at night? You know, what would make your job easier? You know, what is it that you're really trying to accomplish? Again, you can ask your boss the same thing. You know, try to understand what motivates them. Yes, they want to accomplish organizational goals, but are they trying to get promoted? Are they trying to learn new things? Are they trying to create a super high performing team? Are they trying to win an award? I mean, I think it's important to understand your boss as someone more than somebody that's a taskmaster or a micromanager. Because, you know, this whole idea of leadership isn't just an authority thing, that someone in authority has leadership. Leadership is an activity. It really is about influencing another person. And you think about some of the greatest leaders of all time didn't have any authority. Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King. They had no authority. Think of the impact they had. And it was about influence. And it was about because they were working on something they cared deeply about. So really, really good question. Let me go to the next one. Let's see this one. Is this session going to be available for watching later? Yes, it is. It'll be, there'll be a recording of this on Facebook, on YouTube, and LinkedIn. So appreciate that question. And here we've got another one from Wai-Ping Wang. How do you find what motivates the team member? How often do you check that? That's a really good question. How often do you check it? Because our motivations change. You know, they say that the best way to figure out what motivates someone is to just simply ask them, you know. Sometimes that'll work, but I think, you know, that question I offered at the very beginning is a question that I think gets people thinking is, hey, what's the one area that if you made a change would provide the greatest return on time, energy, and dollars for you and other people in your team? Because it really makes you stop and think of, gosh, of all the stuff I've got going on, what's the one thing that's really, really going to make an impact? I mean, for me, for this year, I'm working on my second book, you know, that hopefully will make a big difference in a lot of people's lives. And it's not going to get done really quickly. So oftentimes the things that will make the biggest difference are things that need sacrifice and they need discipline. They're going to be hard. To that earlier point, you know, cause we've got lots of things that will distract us. So good question. And feel free to follow up if I didn't hit it right on. And again, I'll keep taking questions here for a few more minutes. So if you've got them, just crank them in. Somebody said, wow, you're talking about Gandhi and Mother Teresa. Glad to hear from India. You're welcome. I have not been to India, but I have in my, at the University of Colorado, Denver, where I teach MBA students, and before the pandemic, took students to Ireland for a study abroad class, always had always, it seemed like I had two Indian students in all my classes. And even though I haven't been, they shared a lot of the culture and the nuances and the differences between India and Ireland and the United States and broader Europe. So it's always interesting. The other, you know, and while I'm waiting to see if there's any more questions, I want to leave you a story. And I never met this person's manager, but I met this person and I thought, I wonder what kind of manager they had. And here's, let me set this up. It was a couple of months ago. I was traveling to an airport and I had to get a rental car and I had to take a shuttle from the airport to the rental car. And this rental car company I've had terrible experiences with. So my expectations are really low. So it's cold, I've got a bunch of luggage, and I'm getting on the shuttle, and this guy actually helps me. And I'm like, wow, you know, I'm getting service. That just doesn't happen these days. It tells you how low our bar is. And the guy's just really helpful. He gets in his seat, gets on the loudspeaker and says, "Hey, everybody, I'm Dave. You're on the number one rental car bus. I've been here since 1978. Yes, that's right. That's 43 years. If you have any questions, I have the answer. My job is to make the next 5 minutes really enjoyable. I'm going to play some music from the 60s and 70s. And as we went into the rental car facility, there's a couple bumps. And he said, "Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. There's some bumps here. Hang on. I'll go as slow as I can. They can't be avoided." And I thought, what a nice person. Couple weeks later, I go to the same airport. And there's the same guy. And I say, "Dave, I've been telling stories about you. Gosh, what are the odds that I would have you again?" And he goes, "Actually, the odds are 18 to 1. There's 18 of us." Anyway, what I realized was this guy, Dave, didn't just see his job as driving this bus back and forth 5 minutes all day long. He really saw a whole bunch of weary travelers, people that were grumpy and irritable. And he went, "You know what? I'm going to make these 5 minutes a good part of your journey. And maybe, just maybe, I'll put you in a good mood for the rest of the day." And you know what? He did. I mean, he found purpose and meaning in his job. And I just wonder at what point, you know, if this was just him or somebody, some mentor, some boss, someone along the way said, "This isn't just about driving people back and forth." And I think that's our job as leaders, is to help people find purpose and meaning. I don't think that's just our job to say, "Hey, this is our company and this is what we do and this is our mission." I think part of making jobs enjoyable and fun is for people to find out, you know, what is it I'm really doing here? You know, I could say I'm an executive coach, or I could say, you know what, you know, I have conversations with people all day long and I help them become a little bit better version of themselves. Or maybe I help people figure out who they really are. I don't know. Or I could just say I'm an executive coach. So I think that's, you know, an interesting thing for all of us. Let me see if there's, I think there's another one here. What advice or tips would you give on to stop micromanaging? Roland, this is a good one. This comes up all the time because I remember in interviews, I'd always ask people when I was hiring them, you know, what's a good boss look like? And they would always say, not a micromanager. They would never tell me what a good boss looks like, but they'd tell me what a bad boss looks like, which is a micromanager. Well, I think, you know, first off, you got to figure out, why is someone micromanaging in the first place? Is it control issues? Is it insecurities? Is it a lack of self-confidence? Do they not trust the people to delegate? What is it that's behind that micromanagement? Because everybody, before they became a boss, knew micromanaging was terrible. And before they became a boss, said, "I'm not going to be that guy or that woman. I'm not going to be that person." And all of a sudden, they become that person. So I think it's important to figure out where they're at. And this goes back to my comment before, is to be curious about your boss. You know, what is it that they're trying to accomplish? What is it that they fear? You know, and if you can kind of understand, you know, where their motivations come from, maybe you understand a little bit where that behavior comes from. And then maybe you can figure out how you can manage up and help them be more effective. But again, if you were to say to a micromanager, "Look, hey, here's three things I'm going to give to you. I'm going to be reliable, I'm going to be competent, and I'm going to be curious. And if I do that, you know, can I have, you know, can I ask you to trust me, you know, over time, if I earn that trust, you know, that you will give me a degree of autonomy, because that will motivate me." So that might be something, but it's not, "Roland, I would love to give you a recipe and give you a step A, B, C," but, you know, we're talking about humans and the complexity of human behavior. And so, again, I think the important thing is to get really curious about where that's coming from and to have a relationship with someone where you can really have a back and forth and a give and take in that. And if it's untenable, you know, then, you know, and you've tried everything, then you have to say, you know, can I outlast this person and they'll move on, or it's untenable and the values don't align and I can't work here. So, but the other thing is when you become a boss is to make sure, how do I make sure I'm not a micromanager? Because sometimes people aren't even aware. So, I appreciate the question. And then another one here, how do you give good feedback to an employee if he is mistaken? So I'm not sure let me see if I understand it. So, you know, maybe the employee is misinformed. They think they're right, but they're not. I mean, again, the feedback is always starts with a question. You know, I wouldn't say, as an example, I saw somebody interrupting people in a meeting. I wouldn't say, hey, I pull Mary aside and say, hey, Mary, you kept interrupting people in that meeting. That was really rude. I wouldn't say that. First, I wouldn't label somebody by saying rude. I'd say, Mary, how do you think that went in there? How do you, you know, anything you would have done differently? You know, I saw that you interrupted people a lot. Did you pick up on that? And that person might say, oh yeah, I guess I did. You know, well, that's just who I am. Like, ah, well, Mary, what effect do you think that had on other people in the room? How do you think it made them feel? That's a whole different thing. And then Mary would say, oh gosh, I bet they felt, you know, I bet they felt frustrated. I bet they felt angry. I bet they felt disrespected. Oh, so what are you going to do, Mary? Oh, I need to get better. You know, hey, can you, you know, next time we're in a meeting, can you give me feedback? I'll be watching for this. That's a good coaching session that goes, you know, well, but it, as you heard me kind of role play with myself, it really is about asking questions, because what I'm trying to do is get commitment. If I just said to Mary, hey, stop interrupting people in a meeting, you're rude, she might be compliant and do what I said, but she's not understanding why and how hurtful it is and how her behavior is affecting other people. You know, the other thing, if somebody, you know, won't admit to mistakes that they made, that's a whole self-awareness, and that's a, you know, you've got to coach someone to be coachable. You know, hey, my expectation is when you're getting feedback, it's my perception, which is my reality. You have to understand that. And rather than be defensive, I want you to ask questions so that you understand how your behavior is being perceived by other people. So, and again, the more you have these discussions at the beginning and say, this is the kind of relationship we're going to have, you know, with dignity, respect, and open and honest, then it's a lot easier sort of when things are emotional. Next, Meredith is saying, I love that you're bringing up curiosity. I think curiosity is an underrated skill for managers. Well, I think it, you know, Meredith, I think it is for managers. I think it is for a lot of people. You know, we interviewed an amazing person yesterday who was a writer for Sports Illustrated and interviewed some of the world's best athletes over the last 30 years. I mean, you name the athlete that's famous and he's either written a book about him or interviewed him. And, you know, said, what do all these people have in common? And he said two things. One, they hate to lose. that they hate losing more than they like winning. But losing's okay as long as they learn something from it. And two, they're curious. They're really insatiably curious. And I always say that there's two things that are hard to develop and train in people. And that is drive. You know, somebody that's ambitious and has drive and, you know, wants to accomplish things and achieve. And someone who is curious, that asks questions. And I help a lot of people transition, you know, to new careers and out of the military. And honestly, that's one of the things, if I could, you know, wiggle my nose or wave a magic wand and fix things, it would be that people that are trying to get another job or trying to get promoted wouldn't be just saying, hey, look at me, look how great I am, look at all these accomplishments. They would get so much further by trying to understand the person that they're trying to help. I mean, because that's what a job interview is. Somebody is basically saying, I can't do this all by myself. I need to be surrounded by great people. You know, come to me and understand my pain, my problem. But everybody goes to that person saying, here's what I want. Here's what I want to work, you know, 4 hours a day, and I want to be able to go to my kid's soccer game, and I want to be paid a lot of money, and I want lots of vacation and all of these things. When this person is like, I want my life to be easier. You're supposed to come in here and do work and make my life easier. So that's, you know, that's one thing I would love to see is more curiosity all around the board. Another question here coming in. Sometimes at my workplace, few people are typically trying to put me down. I'm sorry to hear that. Although I've been compassionate and good to them, they only end up pushing negativity in me. This sometimes loses my confidence. Am I good? Am I fit? Am I professional? How do I overcome this situation in our day-to-day life? I appreciate the vulnerability in asking that question, and I feel bad that that's the environment you're in. And this goes back to, you know, what motivates all of us. We want to know that we matter, and we want to know that we belong. And, you know, when I see bullying types of behavior or any kind of bad behavior at work, my hypothesis is always, you know, what insecurity do they have that's leading to that behavior? And I try to understand that, not to excuse their behavior, but to understand it. Because if I understand it, then my emotional response is more of, gosh, I feel sorry for them, you know, versus I'm angry or I let it eat away at my own confidence. You know, I remember when I was in sales as a young, you know, a young salesperson, I loved when somebody would say, hey, you know, if you call in that office, that's going to be really hard because that receptionist is really terrible. And I always loved that because I'm like, I wonder why she's terrible. I wonder why she's mean to people. I mean, I wonder what's going on in her life that made her grumpy. And I looked at like, maybe I'm the person that can be nice to her. And maybe I can do that and get by her. And, you know, a cynic would say, well, that's pretty manipulative. You know, somebody that's an optimist would say, well, that, you know, you're being influential. So that's one of the ways I would look at it is, you know, if those types of behaviors, they're probably coming from a place of insecurity. And, you know, the other thing with regard to confidence, you know, I hear this a lot, that a lot of people, and it doesn't matter, it's all levels, all genders, that people, you know, aren't as confident as they may appear. And there's a great article called The Confidence Gap that was in The Atlantic that was written by two women scholars. And I really recommend that if you feel like your confidence is taking a hit, because it'll talk a lot about that and give some really helpful suggestions. Because ultimately, whatever role we're in, what we're trying to do, all of us, all the time, is have this balance between confidence and humility. Too much confidence is arrogance. Too much humility, we can beat ourselves up. There can be a lot of self-blame. And so, you know, we want the right amount of humility to think, you know, we're not too big for our britches. But we want enough confidence that we have a little bit of swagger, because confidence is attractive. And especially in a leader. I mean, we want to follow people that are saying, it's going to be okay. It's going to get better. I mean, you know, that's what we want. We want people that are confident and that they're not just saying it, that they really believe it. So I hope things get better for you in your environment. And I hope that article helps. So again, everybody, I really appreciate all the questions. We're at about 40 minutes, so I'm going to kind of wrap here. But what I would encourage you to do is feel free to send me anything directly on LinkedIn. If you have suggestions for a future workshop, let me know. I'd be glad to put that together. Great resources for you include theleadershippodcast.com, where we have a new episode every week and have for 6 years without missing a week, theleadershippodcast.com. On LinkedIn Learning, I have currently four courses out there on grit, managing in difficult times and leading the organization that I think are really good courses. And we're developing another one on energy and leadership. So look for that one coming out soon. And my website is Self-Reliant Leadership. So again, any way I can be a resource to you in the future, let me know. And if you'd like to share this once the recording posts with friends or colleagues, I would be most appreciative. And in the meantime, have a great rest of the week. And thanks for listening in. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.